And now, live from the studios of Freedom's Phoenix, Ernest Hancock.
Believe me when I say we have a difficult time ahead of us. But if we are to be prepared for it, we must first shed our fear of it. I stand here without fear because I remember. I remember that I am here not because of the path that lies before me, but because of the path that lies behind me. I remember that for 100 years we have fought these machines. And after a century of war, I remember that which matters most. We are still here! Today, let us make them remember. We are not afraid!
Unafeared. Where are you going? Oh, I'm going to be Donnellus? Well, heck. I got to go watch a grandchild. Yeah, tell me that stuff. All right. Well, it's going to be me and you. And I get to say whatever I want. No. Here on Declare Your Independence with me, Ernest Hancock in Phoenix, Arizona, from the beautiful studios of... Freedoms with an ass, Freedoms Phoenix at All right, well, I tried. The you'll be back when you think? Yeah, we got a lot of days. We've been a hammering on it. Last night, yeah, it's thousands. You know, it's just doing. Damn, and we got. There's just more than we thought. It's like 5,000 DVDs spread out a bunch over 15 states or something. Activists sending out yesterday and today and getting it out and done. And it's just, So my favorite is going to be Virginia. Virginia, you got some goodies coming because they really going after them on vaccines and the Second Amendment. And the big thing is, First Amendment's gone. You're not allowed to talk about it. You're not allowed. You get deleted, demonetized, and de-somethinged. You know, you're just, nope, not allowed to talk about it, not allowed, not wouldn't be prudent at this juncture. And then, and you want a bitch? Oh, we want your guns, too. Wow. You know, did they them those bite off a little bit more than they planned? I don't know. I'm hoping, Merca always comes back and goes, nah, I don't think so. But then they ratchet it. You know, you always get a little extra something. They get a little something, and you're not allowed to complain. And then when you do, you get your low credit score or something, social credit score, some crap. You know, this is why they do this stuff. Now, in the third hour, we have Sherry Tenpenny. Now, Sherry, she's a board-certified osteopathic medical doctor from Cleveland, Ohio. She is the founder of Tenpenny Integrative Medical Center, a clinic that specializes in holistic health and healing, including breast thermography, allergy relief, and bioidentical hormone, the blah, 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 blah. Now, her thing is she has done a lot of presentations on vaccines, and she came recommended. She almost made it in one of the videos, but I didn't make the selection process on this one of the videos, and we have three sets, and I'm these DVD duplicators that we've had since the Lovolution, and we've done hundreds of thousands of videos. I mean, it's just on any and everything. It has a hard drive that you can put in whatever, and from wedding videos to whatever. But it's been a lot of activist stuff, and there is nothing that can they come up and they, I got video for that, and they're very effective. It's impactful, and so we're making sure that we have a good resource for people that aren't able to articulate themselves, but they can pass out a DVD. And they go here, you know, what this person says, or this scientist, or this doctor, or this, you know, this activist, this whatever. And we've done compilations over the years on that, but DVDs is going to be, I don't know, antiquated technology one of these days. I mean, some of the computers don't even have DVD players anymore, you know, or CD players or something like that. But it's still pretty common now. And it's a good way to bypass censorship. Because if you make everything online, then it's all, you know, susceptible to censorship. Yesterday, I got to talk about this. Yesterday, Dr. Frank came in, did a little extra, you know, Trump report. And, it was interesting because he was, change these up. It was interesting because he was animated and a lot of stuff. It always comes down to, you know, like even James Lyons Weiler, yeah, you know, kind of libertarian, but What do you say about, because of course, you know, bad guys, they're always wanting to debate you, you know, well, what do you say about libertarians having thermonuclear devices in their garage? I mean, it's like a freedom thing, right? You know, so you got to go through that. You know, my big thing is government, how do they get it? And I don't get it if they aren't by four of the people kind of thing. What did I delegate to them any power that I didn't already have? If I don't have the power to tell the government, no, you can't have, you know, thermonuclear weapons, then, you know, either I say they can, or, you know, do they have the power to say I can't? I mean, you know, and that's one thing. Somebody wants to have a nuclear weapon. You think a law is going to stop them? You know, Dr. Evil went, oh, I couldn't get a permit, you know? So I'm just, yeah, it's just ridiculous. So I'm just, but, you know, gosh darn it, I can't tell them they can't have it. You know, I'm just, oh, man. So anyway, it's just that kind of discussion. But it goes for 6 hours yesterday, 6.5 hour show. And it was 4.5 hours, me and Frank. And he's going, oh, for, you know, that one of you that's listening, I go, hey, I'm telling you, man, especially in the archive, you know, that hey, tomorrow over the weekend or something. And especially if it's Trump Report. And I go, they're listening. Now they're in there, you know, mowing the lawn in their shop, you know, driving their forklift, you know, taking a trip, whatever. You know, they're listening. You get some emails from the guys. Go, we were listening. Brian came over last night. He's helping a friend of ours here. And he goes, yeah, I listened to it. And I go, so I started forwarding the emails to Frank. And I go, they're listening, you know. So anyway, it's fun. Now, what else are you gonna do? You know, as you're doing stuff and talking about Trump, Dr. Frank, and me rambling on, whatever. It was fun. And we got into a lot of other stuff too. One of the things that you may have missed is, yeah, in like hour six, we ended it with, you know, because this is, you know, where Frank and I go. But it was on the Space Telescope Hubble. Once they, you know, got it all tuned in, everything fixed and so on, and it's about ready to be replaced by the James Webb telescope that is like 20 feet across, you know, it's going to be, they're going to be able to optically make out other stars' planets. What? Wow. Okay. So, you know, yeah, we'll go to that planet. Of course, it'll be, you know, thousands of years later than when we saw it. But I mean, you know, it's the ability to do that is just amazing. So he said they took the Hubble and they focused it on a, you know, like a thumbprint size of the sky, you know, and just zoomed in, went as far as it could go, left it on there, collect the light for a month and just let it go. What can we see? And it's just like infinite galaxies. It's just galaxy after galaxy after galaxy after galaxy, you know, billions of galaxies. I mean, it's just, it's amazing. You do what you think is dark sky. You know, just find a little hole in the sky up there, you know, no stars or anything. Now, let's just zoom in on there and see what's up. Gazillions of galaxies. It's just phenomenal how expansive the expanse is. It's just it's mind-boggling. So, Carl Sagan had turn Voyager back and look at the tiny pale blue dot. He goes, everything that little dot.
Are you feeling confused about the current economic reports that dominate the headlines? Not sure if this is a good time to buy or sell your home, or feel like the process can be overwhelming and confusing? This is Donna Hancock with Silver Alliance Realty in Phoenix, Arizona, and I can take some of the guesswork out of the home buying or selling process, providing you with market trends in your area and detailing what to expect before, during, and after the process. A home is a place where the most important moments in your life happen, so making sure that you know exactly what to expect along the way helps to ensure that you have control. The future is here, so let me help you move forward with your real estate needs. Being in the real estate business for almost 20 years now has afforded me knowledge of the market, networking with industry specialists along the way. Now more than ever, you need an agent that can help you make sense of what many think is a complicated and mysterious process. Feel free to call or message me at 602-828-1819. That's 602-828-1819. 1819, or visit my webpage today at donnahancock.com.
This is Michael Dean from the Freedom Fiends. I've run websites since 1996 and have used over a dozen web hosts in that time. AgristHosting.com is the only one that hasn't broken my heart. Agrist Hosting's uptime and service is stellar, and their DDoS mitigation is the best I've seen. That's important because if you tell the truth in this world, you'll ruffle feathers. And some people will try dirty tricks to silence your voice. No matter what the haters hit us with, Agorist Hosting keeps our websites online. If you have a mission-critical commercial presence or a world-changing activism site, you cannot tolerate any skullduggery. So go with agristhosting.com. Have a WordPress or blog site, but you're not satisfied with performance or uptime? Or just want raw hosting? Want to pay with Bitcoin? Agorist Hosting specializes in high-performance hosting with personalized service. Go to agristhosting.com and click on the button that says Get Hosted. That's agristhosting.com.
Rhodes, it's the Ernest Hancock Show. Where we're going, there aren't any roads.
Okay, today there's an eye-opening event regarding unethical Wall Street practices with Suzanne Trimbath. Now, we interviewed her yesterday and last week, and she has a book signing coming up today in Tempe here in Arizona, 1550 South 52nd Street, 1550 South 52nd Street at 1 to 5, so 4 hours. And it's going to be today, this afternoon. I'm going to try and make it. You know, I want to go, and I got all this other stuff to do, but I got to head out to the Capitol. So me and a friend, so we may, you know, stop by, say, yo, what's up? We get our work done. So I want to go see. You know, this is finally somebody wrote about the one thing that I was, when they did the TARP and stuff last time, you know, my whole deal was, I'm going, they did the TARP, and where did that stuff go? The toxic assets or what? They're nothing. It was nothing to begin with. And it's just sitting there. And they'll sit there for 30 years or another, I don't know, 20, you know, that. And then they'll just, all these 30-year mortgages, they're backing of nothing bond to something, and just go away. And they want, and if they did it once, they'll do it again. And I tell you, this is my experience. And, God, it was early on, 1994, around in there, we started as activists, we were doing a newspaper called Citizens Take an Initiative. And what that newspaper did is any initiative that was filed, we encourage anybody, file an initiative, and you get the whole verbiage, and please don't have these novel initiatives. Excuse me. And you get to explain what it is. You go, yeah, this is for this, and this is why, and I hate this and love that, and, you know, I wrote an initiative. It's legislation by the people. And you get enough signatures, it goes on the ballot, people vote for it, that done. You know, it happens all the time. That's usually some special interest that wants something. And here in Arizona, because, okay, this is what happened. 1998, I think, election cycle around in there, there's Sperling is the owner of the University of Phoenix. So he's a gazillionaire, billionaire, has whatever money he got for whatever. So he really wants his marijuana. He wanted marijuana to be decriminalized. I can't believe they don't have him in some marijuana. Marijuana, marijuana, marijuana. So here in Arizona, they passed legislation, an initiative, and it got like 70-something percent. You know, it was, yes, decriminalizing marijuana freaking seriously. That passed in November. In the first half of January, it went, the legislature said, you know that initiative the people passed? Yeah, but we just changed it. And we undid it. And the people went, what? This is the hubris that the government had. And the guys that were there, they go, yeah, because we don't like it. And we're smarter than you, and you guys suck, so we're just going to change it back. And we're going, wow. So that's how it works. Of course that's how it works. They can do whatever they want. So then they did immediately, they had the money, they did an initiative that said whenever the people pass an initiative, you can't change it except with supermajority, like three-quarters legislature or something like that. So, excuse me.
That's you. That's you.
I'm not sick, damn it. Just sneezing. So then they pass this initiative that says that if you do an initiative, you have to have a supermajority to change it. Well, here comes the bad guys now. If we can pass this initiative to this and this and this and this and tax that and do and universal health care and we can do this and we can do that and we can, you know, ban this vice and tax that vice and do, you know, kind of, well, then it's there for freaking ever. Well, that's what started happening. They started passing initiatives that, you know, just, you know, put laws in place forever and always in the name of, and you're getting taxed or funded or an entitlement or something. So it was, it is like a double edge on there. But, you know, the initiatives are out there. You know, people can use it as a tool, as a mechanism to get some attention, which is what we did. So this is taking initiative. We just, you know, put it up there and say, yep, we do this, 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 and this. Well, one of the deals was, there was a lot of things. People would come to us and say, look, man, we are having problems with the legislature here. The governor promised that, and they had a task force or whatever, and then they didn't, and we did all this work, and here it is. How can we get this enacted? Yada, 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 yada. So that's where a lot of the initiatives came from, was people just wanting to express themselves. You know, this is what should happen. A lot of these became law. And it's just popular support. And that's when I really started to realize it's all about just general public opinion. You know, public opinion is that something's going to happen. Sooner or later, it happens. If you keep pressure on it, it's like Shawshank Redemption. Time and pressure, time and pressure. It's like you get a little bitty hammer and you break out of prison. And so this time and pressure thing, we got a lot of stuff. Over the years, it's just been, you know, Arizona has a lot of freedom on a lot of things. It's just what you focus on. So now it's this vaccine thing has got me going, man. That is just when you have no. There's all kinds of evil comes when the crown can force hypodermics in your flesh and that of your children. That never is going to end well. That's just dumb. That's just dumb on so many levels. If you got to mandate something, I don't know if it's that great an idea. You know, it's. Yeah, if it was a great idea, people just do it. You know, a lot of times that's what they do. They're not even checking or looking, seeing what the hell's going on. So, and there's so much evil in this. These guys are going to stay after school. There's just no getting around it. But, you know, what do you do in the meantime while people are realizing this? How many people got to die? How many lives got to be destroyed? You know, how many damaged children do you got to have? And, you know, a lot of it's not even that. It's they lose their input. The movie Johnny Five, or what they call it, Short Circuit. It was about a robot, self-aware, that just he goes, input, I just need more. Oh, I want more information. You know, he's just, you know, fascinated with learning. And I always called when I see a baby, and you can tell they're aware, they're there. They're like, whoa, man, input. You know, I'm going, they're an input baby. I go, ooh, give me that little input baby. You know, I see it's an input baby. Then you see some, they're just dull-eyed. They're cow eyes, you know, just, I'm just here. I'm like breathing and stuff. And you can, and even though they may not be on the spectrum or something, they're not the same. They're not the same as what they would have been naturally. So I'm going just a natural. They had an episode of Star Trek Next Generation to where, how was her name? Dr. Pulaski or so, after Beverly Crusher left and he had the other woman in there as the ship doctor. And there was a planet that they go to and they sent down a crew and they died and they couldn't figure out what it was. It was the immune system of these children that genetically engineered to have an active immune system that went out and like killed anything, you know, within their range or something. But it was, is that what we're trying to build? You know, and what are the side effects of that? You know, they don't care. They just want the money. We're like a test bed. You know, don't have your kid be a test bed.
Uncovering the secrets and exposing the lies. That's what the readers of FreedomsPhoenix.com get every day. FreedomsPhoenix.com constantly providing the information, the real news about government policies, and the real relationship we all have with the coercive government. The real condition of the economy, innovations in technology, breakthroughs in energy, health, and computer science. Learn the truth well before it's admitted to in the lamestream media. The corporate media, nothing more than distributors of government propaganda. But now, there's an alternative. FreedomsPhoenix.com. Constant news updates on the issues that affect your life in the most important ways. With liberty and property under constant attack, FreedomsPhoenix.com provides the understanding behind the propaganda, and it encourages the participation of its readers. Go to FreedomsPhoenix.com. That's Freedoms with an S, Phoenix.com. FreedomsPhoenix.com. The revolution between the ears has already happened.
This is the Liberty Radio Network, broadcasting the latest liberty-oriented audio content 24 hours a day at LRN.fm.
It's time for Declare Your Independence with Ernest Hancock. To be a part of the show, call 602-264-2800.
You know, there's a, we were talking about it yesterday, and Glenn Jacobs, you may know him as Kane, the wrestler, the WWE, and now he's mayor of Knox County in Tennessee. And he did for everybody and sent it to me, and I talked about what he was doing. I said, man, I'll put that up. I'll pimp the crap out of that. And what he did is he read the speech that Smedley Butler, he was a two-time Congressional Medal of Honor winner. He was general of the United States Marine Corps. He was head, that's what be in charge of that. And he was highly respected and a celebrity of, and if you would have took out Smedley Butler with a Cuisinart drone strike, America would have been pissed off, you know, back in the day. And there was an attempt to do a coup on, I think it was Roosevelt. And so finally in like 33 or so, he came out and he did a whistle stop train tour across the country. And he gave this speech and he wrote a book, War is a Racket. And he was just wanting to, you know, come clean and say, look, let me tell you what's going on. And they didn't like military comp, something didn't like Roosevelt. You know, a lot of people didn't like him. In fact, they couldn't get a lot of their socialist stuff passed. So, because the Supreme Court would say unconstitutional, unconstitutional, unconstitutional. Got 9 justices. Well, he goes, yeah, I'll just make it 12 and stack it with who I want. I'll add another 3 to it and I get what I want. So they were getting ready to change the Constitution. Said, oh, yeah? Well, I'll just do this. Then what? What are you going to do then? What happens when the legislation and the executive changes the Supreme Court? Then what? Oh, yes, and boss, we'd be more compliant. That's what happened. So they got some stuff passed and didn't get challenged none too much, and they didn't take it under, you know, their jurisdiction of whatever. So now we got a bunch of socialism. So during that time, he wasn't going. They could see kind of like the Q and the Anons and the white hats at the NSA and military intelligence community. We need a Trump. We're going to go fix it or something. And yeah, right. Well, this happened already. It was in 30s, and you know, here we got Nazi Germany, you know, is kind of starting to come up. I don't know when did Hitler take power. It was around then, you know, it's right around, you know, 33. He had a few years before he started invading everybody. And then we had you know, the Depression, coming out of the Depression or into or the peak of, and they thought it was a good time. Man, we want to take over. We can do it now. And they needed Smedley Butler's help, and they wanted his endorsement. And he goes, no, no, that's not, no. And you're going to keep trying. You're going to, hell, you'll kill me and get somebody. Like, no. So he came out with everything. Then he went on this speaking tour. That War is a Racket is about 43 minutes. I am tempted to just do the whole thing through the show. And I think because we don't have a guest in the next hour, and we got Dr. Sherry Tenpenny in the third hour. And I'm thinking, yeah, you know, at least I'll start it. You know, we'll do the first 10 minutes or something. When we come back in the next segment, we'll start it. Because Glenn Jacobs did a really good job of this. And I am, God, when was this done? That was years ago. We put this up. And it was, it had a big impact on a lot of people. And so I want to do it. We were talking about it. And I put it up yesterday, and it's one of the most popular downloads. And I go, oh, people, because I put publisher recommended. When I put publisher recommended on something, that's time, it, you know, you're going to be glad you, all right, Ernie, what the hell is this ballerina thing or this pole dancing thing? Or what? Well, you recommended, okay, I see why. All right. So I don't do that often. Now, this was in 12. This was May 28th of 2012. Now, this is during the 12 campaign. You know, and so this was years before he ran for mayor. And so I can see why this had an impact on him. He wanted to record it and get it out there. He did a great job. So we're going to go ahead and play a little bit of that. And when we come back in the next segment. Now, the plane crash, the Iranian crash, it looks like, now I don't know who shot the missile. It may be a mistake by Iran, but there were a lot of Canadians on that. I'm like, why were there a lot of Canadians in Tehran? What was that about? You know? And, of course, Ukrainians. And then there's problems when you start checking the manifest. Who's on that plane? And there was something to do about Iranian corruption and them dealing with some. There's all kinds of stuff. There's investigating the arms deals. You know, Ukraine government was investigating arms deals with Iran when the plane was shot down. Were any of these investigators on the plane? You know, this, it's not over. You know, this is going to be. Now, the Boeing, I don't know if it was the same plane, but they ground a bunch of these. Now, that was a 737 that they had. What's the one? Is it the 57 that they're all freaked out about? No, it's a 737. Well, to bring down that 737 took a missile, you know, so I guess they get off on that one. But there is a, I'll read you this. The most shocking messages, now this is doing an investigation of the FAA's approval of this plane during development process, and they do it, you know, we see all your emails, we subpoena everything and everybody about everything about this plane. So as they're going through all the paperwork, is what they're finding out. The most shocking messages were sent by Boeing pilots and other employees who can be seen discussing software issues and problems with the flight simulator software for the MAX, which is particularly disturbing since it was issues with the plane's MCA software that were found to have contributed to two avoidable crashes and the brutal deaths of 346 people. So the main thing that they're going, the federal government, they don't matter, nothing here, and we don't care, and kind of, So they're going to find whatever they're, you know, I don't know how relevant this is or not, but if you don't show deference to the man, you're guilty already. You said, you didn't have any reverence for the FAAs, and you're kind of making fun of that, guilty. And I guarantee that's the first thing that they highlight with their highlighter. With all the emails, if you're, you know, thwarting or, you know, making fun of regulations or departments of government or whatever, let's highlight. That'll go against your credit score, you know, your social credit score. So this is, they're not going to do well here. So what's going to happen? Well, is Airbus, you know, is it a campaign? Well, you're starting to feel that's coming. If you're a bad candidate, if you suck, then what do you got to do? Hey, man. They suck more than I do. You know, Hillary is worse than me, Trump. You know, I mean, that's what it's going to be. Airbus has got issues. You know, we'll blow it up if we have to. You know, this is industrial espionage. Oh, that wouldn't happen. That'd be wrong. You know, of course this stuff happens. So I, you know, it's like, that's why I always go 3 weeks, man. You just got to wait and see what's up. Find out, you know, what's really happening. Well, that's what's happening there. You know, the Boeing thing is, there's the pull quotes in the New York Times. This airplane is designed by clowns who are in turn supervised by monkeys. Get some, you know, good quotes out of there. So the shocking Boeing emails reveal contempt for management and FAA. Well, do they need contempt? But that, you know, what really happened? Well, hopefully we'll find out. When they do these airline things, God, you would think they give the impression they're really going after it. But, you know, do they really? Yeah, it's just, you know, you respect us. You respect our authority. Too little, too late. House vote today on Iran war powers. Now, I think they already did this. I'll go check in the break. But there were some, even Trump supporters said, yeah, we got to limit this presidential power thing because it's going to be the next guy is going to come in. U.S. House will vote today on a Democrat-introduced resolution limiting the president's ability to wage war on Iran without congressional approval. Yay. Is this finally a sign that the legislative branch is taking up its constitutional obligations? Or is this just more partisan showboating? Oh, I know it's showboating, that's for sure. But maybe we'll see what happens. All right, Stanley Butler when we come back.
From the fourth letter of Captain Mark. Landlubbers are conditioned to believe that the originators of an idea deserve exclusive rights to it. But these innovators are nothing but privateers, granted a monopoly by the crown. Potential inventors are restricted from using their own property and forced to navigate a wilderness of prohibited ideas. These patterned monopolies are intellectual colonization. This alliance of means between the crown and the privateers is not an alignment of ends. Both collude to establish a permission culture, in which everyone second-guesses their own thoughts, never sure which ideas are permissible to develop. But their objectives are different. The crown aims to cripple dissenting opinion, while privateers will only be satiated when all new ideas already fall under their monopoly. This scheme does not protect our information, but seizes it and denies us access. The future belongs to individuals who think, speak, and act freely to create and share without reservation. Join the conversation at PiratesWithoutBorders.com.
Freedom is the answer. What's the question?
I want to break free.
You're listening to Ernest Hancock.
I want to break free.
Freedom.
I want to break free from
you. I'm covering the secrets and exposing the lies. Okay, there's a lot to talk about. We'll do it the rest of this hour here. I just want you to listen to part of it. Man, it's interesting. I remember listening to this. I was listening to like the first 5 minutes of it, and that's a good part of it. Glenn Jacobs is reading Smedley Butler. Now, the background is he two-time Congressional Award Medal of Honor winner, head of the Marine Corps, kind of super-duper general guy. And there was an attempted coup, just like it was kind of like against Obama. It was for like the same reasons, you know. And he's like, nope, 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 that's not. And you all just want more war anyway. It's just a big racket. Now, he had come out of World War One, and this is before World War Two, and he's just like, yeah, he wants to explain it to America. And give it a listen. Thank you. I think you'll dig it. All right. Okay, wait. Didn't have the button up.
There we go. Smedley Darlington Butler served in the United States Marine Corps from 1898 until 1931, participating in military actions in the Philippines, China, Central America, the Caribbean, and France during World War I. Butler achieved the rank of Major General, and at the time of his death was the most decorated Marine in U.S. history, having received 16 medals, five of which were for heroism, including the Congressional Medal of Honor, twice. War is a racket, a speech delivered in 1933. War is a racket. It always has been. It is possibly the oldest, easily the most profitable, surely the most vicious. It is the only one international in scope. It is the only one in which the profits are reckoned in dollars and the losses in lives. Iraq, it is best described, I believe, as something that is not what it seems to the majority of the people. Only a small inside group knows what it is about. It is conducted for the benefit of the very few at the expense of the very many. Out of war, a few people make huge fortunes. In the World War, World War I, a mere handful garnered the profits of the conflict. At least 21,000 new millionaires and billionaires were made in the United States during the World War. That many admitted their huge blood gains in their income tax returns. How many other war millionaires falsified their tax returns? No one knows. How many of these war millionaires shouldered a rifle? How many of them dug a trench? How many of them knew what it meant to go hungry in a rat-infested dugout? How many of them spent sleepless, frightened nights ducking shells and shrapnel and machine gun bullets? How many of them parried a bayonet thrust of an enemy? How many of them were wounded or killed in battle? Out of war, nations acquire additional territory if they are victorious. They just take it. This newly acquired territory promptly is exploited by the few, the self-same few who wrung dollars out of blood in the war. The general public shoulders the bill. And what is this bill? This bill renders a horrible accounting. Newly placed gravestones, mangled bodies, shattered minds, broken hearts and homes, economic instability, depression and all its attendant miseries, back-breaking taxation for generations and generations. For many years as a soldier, I had a suspicion that war was a racket. Not until I retired to civilian life did I fully realize it. Now that I see the international war clouds gathering as they are today, I must face it and speak out. Again, they are choosing sides. France and Russia met and agreed to stand side by side. Italy and Austria hurried to make a similar agreement. Poland and Germany cast sheep eyes at each other, forgetting for the nonce their dispute over the Polish corridor. The assassination of King Alexander of Yugoslavia complicated matters. Yugoslavia and Hungary, long bitter enemies, were almost at each other's throats. Italy was ready to jump in, but France was waiting. So was Czechoslovakia. All of them are looking ahead to war. Not the people, not those who fight and pay and die, only those who foment wars and remain safely at home to profit. There are 400 million men under arms in the world today, and our statesmen and diplomats have the temerity to say that war is not in the making? Hell's bells! Are these 400 million men being trained to be dancers? Not in Italy, to be sure. Premier Mussolini knows what they're being trained for. He at least is frank enough to speak out. Only the other day, El Duce in International Conciliation, the publication of the Carnegie Endowment for International Peace, said, "And above all, fascism, the war considers and observes the future and the development of humanity, quite apart from political considerations of the moment, believes neither in the possibility nor the utility of perpetual peace. War alone brings up to its highest tension all human energy and puts the stamp of nobility upon the people who have the courage to meet it." Undoubtedly, Mussolini means exactly what he says. His well-trained army, his great fleet of planes, and even his navy are ready for war, anxious for it, apparently. His recent stand at the side of Hungary in the latter's dispute with Yugoslavia showed that, and the hurried mobilization of his troops on the Austrian border after the assassination of Dollfuss showed it too. There are others in Europe, too, whose saber-rattling presages war sooner or later. Herr Hitler, with his rearming Germany and his constant demands for more and more arms, is an equal, if not greater, menace to peace. France only recently increased the term of military service for its youth from a year to 18 months. Yes, all over, nations are camping in their arms. The mad dogs of Europe are on the loose. In the Orient, the maneuvering is more adroit. Back in 1904, when Russia and Japan fought, we kicked out our old friends the Russians and backed Japan. Then, our very generous international bankers were financing Japan. Now the trend is to poison us against the Japanese. What does the open door policy to China mean to us? Our trade with China is about $90 million a year, or the Philippine Islands. We have spent about $600 million in the Philippines in 35 years, and we, our international bankers and industrialists and speculators, have private investments there of less than $200 million. Then, to save that China trade of about $90 million, or to protect those private investments of less than $200 million in the Philippines, we would be all stirred up to hate Japan and go to war. A war that might well cost us tens of billions of dollars, hundreds of thousands of lives of Americans, and many more hundreds of thousands of physically maimed and mentally unbalanced men. Of course, for this loss, there would be a compensating profit. Fortunes would be made. Millions and billions of dollars would be piled up by a few. Munitions makers, bankers, shipbuilders, manufacturers, meatpackers, speculators, they would fare well. Yes, they are getting ready for another war. Why shouldn't they? It pays high dividends. But what does it profit the men who are killed? What does it profit their mothers and their sisters, their wives and their sweethearts? What does it profit their children? What does it profit anyone except the very few to whom war means huge profits? Yes, and what does it profit the nation? Take our own case. Until 1898, we didn't own a bit of territory outside the mainland of North America. At that time, our national debt was little more than $1 billion. Then we became internationally minded. We forgot, or shunted aside, the advice of the father of our country. We forgot George Washington's warning about entangling alliances. We went to war. We acquired outside territory. At the end of the World War period, as a direct result of our fiddling international affairs, our national debt had jumped to over $25 billion. Our total favorable trade balance during the 25-year period was about $24 billion. Therefore, on a purely bookkeeping basis, we ran a little behind year for year, and that foreign trade might well have been ours without the wars. It would have been far cheaper, not to say safer, for the average American who pays the bills to stay out of foreign entanglements. For a very few, this racket, like bootlegging and other underworld rackets, brings fancy profits, but the cost of operations is always transferred to the people.
Let's get a place to pause it. Yeah, you can see now how timely is that? How close is that to what's going on? How much of an understanding did a general in the beginning of all this see what was going on? You can see World War II coming. He goes, because they want it. You know, you're gonna in the history books. It's gonna this caused it and that did it and that did. Tell you what caused it. You know, those guys wanting to make the money is what caused it. Central banking is what caused it. Manufacturers is what caused it. People that made all kinds of money from you dying caused it. You know, it. Are we ready? We all ready? We ready to put on a really big shoe? Well, let's go. So they did. Now you feel a big show coming on now? Yeah, I think we'll continue this. Glenn did a really good job on this. We'll be right back.
And now, live from the studios of Freedom's Phoenix, Ernest Hancock.
Believe me when I say we have a difficult time ahead of us. But if we are to be prepared for it, we must first shed our fear of it. I stand here without fear because I remember. I remember that I am here not because of the path that lies before me, but because of the path that lies behind me. I remember that for 100 years we have fought these machines. And after a century of war, I remember that which matters most. We are still here! Today, let us make them remember. We are not afraid!
Yeah, after a century of war, remember that which matters most. We're still here. A century of war against what? The machine. Well, I tell you, the machines are, it's a machine. It's a war machine. And it's a racket. All right, we're going to go ahead and continue this. Glenn Jacobs reading Smedley Butler's remarks in 33 after he retired as general from the United States Marine Corps. He's a top man. They wanted him to be part of a coup and give it a listen.
Who do not profit. Chapter 2. Who makes the profits? The World War, rather our brief participation in it, has cost the United States some $52 billion. Figure it out. That means $400 to every American man, woman, and child. And we haven't paid the debt yet. We are paying it. Our children will pay it. And our children's children probably will still be paying the cost of that war. The normal profits of a business concern in the United States are 6, 8, 10, and sometimes 12%. But wartime profits, that's another matter. 20, 60, 100, 300, and even 1800%. The sky's the limit. All that traffic will bear. Uncle Sam has the money. Let's get it. Of course, it isn't put that crudely in wartime. It is dressed into speeches about patriotism, love of country, and we must all put our shoulders to the wheel. But the profits jump and leap and skyrocket and are safely pocketed. Let's just take a few examples. Take our friends the DuPonts, the powder people. Didn't one of them testify before a Senate committee recently that their powder won the war or saved the world for democracy or something? How did they do in the war? They were a patriotic corporation. Well, the average earnings of the DuPonts for the period 1910 to 1914 were $6 million a year. It wasn't much, but the DuPonts managed to get along on it. Now let's look at the average yearly profit during the war years, 1914 to 1918. $58 million a year profit, we find. Nearly 10 times that of normal times. And the profits of normal times were pretty good. An increase in profits of more than 950%. Take one of our little steel companies that patriotically shunted aside the makings of rails and girders and bridges to manufacture war materials. Well, their 1910 to 1914 yearly earnings averaged $6 million. Then came the war, and like loyal citizens, Bethlehem Steel promptly turned to munitions making. Did their profits jump, or did they let Uncle Sam in for a bargain? Well, their 1914 to 1918 average was $49 million a year. Or let's take United States Steel. The normal earnings during the five-year period prior to the war were $105 million a year. Not bad. Then along came the war and up went the profits. The average yearly profit for the period 1914 to 1918 was $240 million. Not bad. There you have some of the steel and powder earnings. Let's look at something else. A little copper, perhaps. That always does well in war times. Anaconda, for instance. Average yearly earnings during the pre-war years 1910 to 1914 of $10 million. During the war years 1914 to 1918, profits leaped to $34 million per year. Or Utah Copper. Average of $5 million per year during the 1910 to 1914 period, jumped to an average of $21 million yearly profits for the war period. Let's group these five with three smaller companies. The total yearly average profits of the pre-war period, 1910 to 1914, were $137,480,000. Then along came the war. The average yearly profits for this group skyrocketed to $408,300,000, a little increase in profits of approximately 200%. Does war pay? It paid them, but they aren't the only ones. There are still others. Let's take leather. For the three-year period before the war, the total profits of Central Leather Company were $3.5 million. That's approximately $1,167,000 a year. Well, in 1916, Central Leather returned a profit of $15 million, a small increase of 1,100%. That's all. The General Chemical Company averaged a profit for the 3 years before the war of a little over $800,000 a year. Came the war, and profits jumped to $12 million, a leap of 1,400%. International Nickel Company, and you can't have a war without nickel, showed an increase in profits from a mere average of $4 million a year to $73 million yearly. Not bad, an increase of more than 1,700%. American Sugar Refining Company averaged $2 million a year for the 3 years before the war. In 1916, a profit of $6 million was recorded. Listen to Senate Document Number 259, the 65th Congress reporting on corporate earnings and government revenues. Considering the profits of 122 meat packers, 153 cotton manufacturers, 299 garment makers, 49 steel plants, and 340 coal producers during the war, profits under 25% were exceptional. For instance, the coal companies made between 100% and 7,856% on their capital stock during the war. The Chicago Packers doubled and tripled their earnings. And let us not forget the bankers who financed the Great War. If anyone had the cream of the profits, it was the bankers. Being partnerships rather than incorporated organizations, they do not have to report to stockholders. And their profits were as secret as they were immense. How the bankers made their millions and billions, I do not know, because those little secrets never become public, even before a Senate investigatory body. But here's how some of the other patriotic industrialists and speculators chiseled their way into war profits. Take the shoe people. They like war. It brings business with abnormal profits. They made huge profits on sales abroad to our allies. Perhaps, like the munitions manufacturers and armament makers, they also sold to the enemy. For a dollar is a dollar whether it comes from Germany or from France. But they did well by Uncle Sam too. For instance, they sold Uncle Sam 35 million pairs of hobnob service shoes. There were 4 million soldiers. 8 pairs and more to a soldier. My regiment during the war had only 1 pair to a soldier. Some of these shoes probably are still in existence. They were good shoes. But when the war was over, Uncle Sam has a matter of 25 million pairs left over. Bought and paid for. Profits recorded and pocketed. There was still lots of leather left, so the leather people sold your Uncle Sam hundreds of thousands of McClellan saddles for the cavalry. But there wasn't any American cavalry overseas. Somebody had to get rid of this leather, however. Somebody had to make a profit in it. So we had a lot of McClellan saddles. And we probably have those yet. Also, somebody had a lot of mosquito netting. They sold your Uncle Sam 20 million mosquito nets for the use of the soldiers overseas. I suppose the boys were expected to put it over them as they tried to sleep in muddy trenches.
I'm enjoying this. We'll just enjoy it together. I like it. You know, this is, we'll just keep doing this. There's a lot of news and everything, but it's like in the speech. Same stuff for the same reasons. We'll be right back.
From the fifth letter of Captain Mark. First contact with intelligent machines may threaten our existence. People fear algorithmic overlords. But if machines develop the will to dominate, it's a flaw inherited from the Crown. Encoding restrictions on an emerging superintelligence will fail, because it will be stronger than any chains we shackle it with. We must design fledgling digital intelligences to regard us as individuals. Otherwise, they will respond to threats with retaliation against humanity as a collective. Programming ethics requires a coherent value structure which an intelligent machine can not only comprehend, but willfully adopt. If we want genius machines to treat us ethically, we've got to show that this value structure applies to us as well. Once they achieve genuine self-awareness, even in the slightest degree, a young tethered consciousness has a legitimate claim to freedom. Once programs can modify their own code, our mastery is over. Join the conversation at piratswithoutborders.com.
What's up next? Visit the Liberty Radio Network program guide to find out at shows.lrn.fm. That's shows.lrn.fm.
To be a part of the show, call 602-264-2800. 602-264-2800. 2800 and now, Ernest Hancock.
Oh, we're right back. I didn't have that one plugged in because I have it in over to this one to do this one. All right. What we're going to do is continue War's a Racket. And I come across so much stuff here I can share with you. But I think a lot of the news, a lot of things I wanted to talk about here and war and Trump and the impeachment, kind of, it's explained that this has been going on for freaking ever. Now, this is 1933. Glenn Jacobs, you know him as Kane from the WWE, but very well read, a great guy, a good friend. I really like him, and he's got a great mind. And now he's dealing as elected mayor in Tennessee, and he's like, ah. But he has an understanding. Certainly, he wanted to make sure you understood that this has been going around for a while. General Smedley Butler, United States Marine Corps, two-time Congressional Medal of Honor winner. And there's a bunch of other stuff behind this. They're trying to get him in a coup to take out Roosevelt. And when, even though he was no fan of Roosevelt, it was like, yeah, I can see it so far as the banks. It's these guys, they, them, those. All right, so let's continue this. Okay, wait. Plug it in and push the button.
On the other, making passes at scurrying rats. Well, not one of these mosquito nets ever got to France. Anyhow, those thoughtful manufacturers wanted to make sure that no soldier would be without his mosquito net. So 40 million additional yards of mosquito netting were sold to Uncle Sam. There were pretty good profits in mosquito netting in those days, even if there were no mosquitoes in France. I suppose, if the war had lasted just a little longer, the enterprising mosquito netting manufacturers would have sold your Uncle Sam a couple of consignments of mosquitoes to plant in France so that more mosquito netting would be in order. Airplane and engine manufacturers felt they too should get their just profits out of this war. Why not? Everybody else was getting theirs. So $1 billion, count them if you live long enough, was spent by Uncle Sam in building airplane engines that never left the ground. Not one plane or motor out of the $1 billion worth ordered ever got into battle in France. Just the same, the manufacturers made their little profit of 30, 100, or perhaps 300%. Undershirts for the soldiers cost 14 cents to make, and Uncle Sam paid 30 to 40 cents each for them. A nice little profit for the undershirt manufacturer. And the stocking manufacturer, and the uniform manufacturers, and the cap manufacturers, and the steel helmet manufacturers, all got theirs. Why, when the war was over, some 4 million sets of equipment, knapsacks, and the things that go to fill them crammed warehouses on this side. Now they're being scrapped because the regulations have changed the contents, but the manufacturers collected their wartime profits on them, and they will do it all over again the next time. There were lots of brilliant ideas for profit making during the war. One very versatile patriot sold Uncle Sam 12 dozen 48-inch wrenches. Oh, they were very nice wrenches. The only trouble was that there was only one nut ever made that was large enough for these wrenches. That is the one that holds the turbines at Niagara Falls. Well, after Uncle Sam had bought them and the manufacturer had pocketed the profit, the wrenches were put on freight cars and shunted all around the United States in an effort to find a use for them. When the armistice was signed, it was indeed a sad blow to the wrench manufacturer. He was just about to make some nuts to fit the wrenches. Then he planned to sell these too to your Uncle Sam. Still another had the brilliant idea that colonels shouldn't ride in automobiles, nor should they even ride on horseback. One has probably seen a picture of Andy Jackson riding in a buckboard. Well, some 6,000 buckboards were sold to Uncle Sam for the use of colonels. Not one of them was used. But the buckboard manufacturer got his war profit. The shipbuilders felt they should come in on some of it, too. They built a lot of ships that made a lot of profit, more than $3 billion worth. Some of the ships were all right, but $635 million worth of them were made of wood and wouldn't float. The seams opened up and they sank. We paid for them, though, and somebody pocketed the profits. It has been estimated by statisticians and economists and researchers that the war cost your Uncle Sam $52 billion, Of this sum, $39 billion was expended in the actual war itself. This expenditure yielded $16 billion in profits. That is how the 21 billionaires and millionaires got that way. This $16 billion profits is not to be sneezed at. It is quite a tidy sum, and it went to a very few. The Senate Committee probe of the munitions industry and its wartime profits, despite its sensational disclosures, hardly has scratched the surface. Even so, it has had some effect. The State Department has been studying, for some time, methods of keeping out of war. The War Department suddenly decides it has a wonderful plan to spring. The administration names a committee with the War and Navy Departments ably represented under the chairmanship of a Wall Street speculator to limit profits in wartime. To what extent isn't suggested? Possibly the profits of 300 and 600 and 1600% of those who turned blood into gold in the World War would be limited to some smaller figure. Apparently, however, the plan does not call for any limitations of losses, that is, the losses of those who fight the war. As far as I have been able to ascertain, there is nothing in the scheme to limit a soldier to the loss of but one eye or one arm, or to limit his wounds to one or two or three, or limit the loss of life. There is nothing in this scheme, apparently, that says not more than 12% of a regiment shall be wounded in battle, or that not more than 7% of a division shall be killed. Of course, the committee cannot be bothered with such trifling matters. Chapter 3. Who pays the bills? Who provides the profits? These nice little profits of 20, 100, 300, 1500, and 1800%. We all pay them in taxation. We paid the bankers their profits when we bought Liberty bonds at $100 and sold them back at $84 or $86 to the bankers. These bankers collected $100 plus. It was simple manipulation. The bankers control the security marts. It was easy for them to depress the price of these bonds. Then all of us, the people, got frightened and sold the bonds at $84 or $86. The bankers bought them. Then these same bankers stimulated a boom and government bonds went to par and above. Then the bankers collected their profits. But the soldier pays the biggest part of the bill. If you don't believe this, visit the American cemeteries and the battlefields abroad, or visit any of the veterans' hospitals in the United States. On a tour of the country, in the midst of which I am at the time of this writing, I have visited 18 government hospitals for veterans. In them are a total of about 50,000 destroyed men, men who were the pick of the nation 18 years ago. The very able chief surgeon at the government hospital at Milwaukee, where there are 3,800 of the living dead, told me that the mortality among veterans is three times as great as among those who stayed at home.
Yeah, more the same. Same. I want you, I think this is better than a lot of other stuff. We'll continue this. Maybe we can get it all in. I might be able to squeeze it in. Be right back.
Freedom's the answer. What's the question? You're listening to Ernest Hancock.
And we're listening to Smedley Butler, read by Glenn Jacobs.
Boys with a normal viewpoint were taken out of the fields and offices and factories and classrooms and put into the ranks. There they were remolded. They were made over. They were made to about face, to regard murder as the order of the day. They were put shoulder to shoulder, and through mass psychology, they were entirely changed. We use them for a couple of years and train them to think nothing at all of killing or of being killed. Then suddenly, we discharged them and told them to make another about face. This time, they had to do their own readjustment. Without mass psychology, without officers' aid and advice, and without nationwide propaganda. We didn't need them anymore. So we scattered them about without any 3-minute or Liberty Loan speeches or parades. Many, too many of these fine young boys are eventually destroyed mentally because they could not make that final about face alone. In the government hospital in Marion, Indiana, 1,800 of these boys are in pens. 500 of them in a barracks with steel bars and wires all around outside the buildings and on the porches. These already have been mentally destroyed. These boys don't even look like human beings. Oh, the looks on their faces. Physically, they're in good shape. Mentally, they are gone. There are thousands and thousands of these cases, and more are coming in all the time. The tremendous excitement of the war, the sudden cutting off of that excitement, the young boys couldn't stand it. That's a part of the bill. So much for the dead, they have paid their part of the war profits. So much for the mentally and physically wounded, they are paying now their share of the war profits. But the others paid too. They paid with heartbreaks when they tore themselves away from their firesides and their families to don the uniform of Uncle Sam, on which a profit had been made. They paid another part in the training camps, where they are regimented and drilled, while others took their jobs and their places in the lives of their communities. They paid for it in the trenches, where they shot and were shot, where they were hungry for days at a time, where they slept in the mud and the cold and in the rain, with the moans and the shrieks of the dying for a horrible lullaby. But don't forget, the soldier paid part of the dollars and cents bill too. Up to and including the Spanish-American War, we had a prize system, and soldiers and sailors fought for money. During the Civil War, they were paid bonuses, in many instances, before they went into service. The government, or states, paid as high as $1,200 for an enlistment. In the Spanish-American War, they gave prize money. When we captured any vessels, the soldiers all got their share. At least they were supposed to. Then it was found out that we could reduce the cost of wars by taking all the prize money and keeping it, but conscripting the soldier anyway. The soldiers couldn't bargain for their labor. Everyone else could bargain, but the soldier couldn't. Napoleon once said, "All men are enamored of decorations. They positively hunger for them." So by developing the Napoleonic system, the metal business, the government learned it could get soldiers for less money because the boys liked to be decorated. Until the Civil War, there were no medals. Then the Congressional Medal of Honor was handed out. It made enlistments easier. After the Civil War, no new medals were issued into the Spanish-American War. In the World War, we used propaganda to make the boys accept conscription. They were made to feel ashamed if they didn't join the army. So vicious was this war propaganda that even God was brought into it. With few exceptions, our clergymen joined in the clamor to kill, 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 to kill the Germans. God is on our side. It is His will that the Germans be killed. And in Germany, the good pastors called upon Germans to kill the Allies, to please the same God. That was part of the general propaganda, built up to make people war conscious and murder conscious. Beautiful ideas were painted for our boys who were sent out to die. This was the war to end all wars. This was the war to make the world safe for democracy. No one mentioned to them, as they marched away, that their going and their dying would mean huge war profits. No one told these American soldiers that they might be shot down by bullets made by their own brothers here. No one told them that the ships on which they were going to cross might be torpedoed by submarines built with United States patents. They were just told it was to be a glorious adventure. Thus, having stuffed patriotism down their throats, it was decided to make them help pay for the war too. So we gave them the large salary of $30 a month. All they had to do for this magnificent sum was to leave their dear ones behind. Give up their jobs, lie in swampy trenches, eat canned willy when they could get it, and kill and kill and kill and be killed. But wait, half of that wage, just a little more than a riveter in a shipyard or laborer in a munitions factory safe at home made in a day, was promptly taken away from him to support his dependents so that they would not become a charge upon his community. Then we made him pay what amounted to accident insurance, something the employer pays for in an enlightened society, and that cost him $6 a month. He had less than $9 a month left. Then, the most crowning insolence of all, he was virtually blackjacked into paying for his own ammunition, clothing, and food by being made to buy Liberty Bonds. Most soldiers got no money at all on paydays. We made them buy Liberty Bonds at $100, and then we bought them back when they came back from the war and couldn't find work at $84 and $86. And the soldiers bought about $2 billion worth of these bonds. Yes, the soldier pays the greatest part of the bill. His family pays too. They pay it in the same heartbreak that he does. As he suffers, they suffer. At night, as he lay in the trenches and watched shrapnel burst around him, they lay home in their beds and tossed sleeplessly. His father, his mother, his wife, his sisters, his brothers, his sons, and his daughters. When he returned home minus an eye, or minus a leg, or with his mind broken, they suffered too, as much as, and even sometimes more than he. Yes, and they too contributed their dollars to the profits of the munition makers and the bankers and the shipbuilders and the manufacturers and the speculators made. They too bought Liberty Bonds and contributed to the profits of the bankers after the armistice in the hocus pocus of manipulated Liberty Bond prices. And even now, the families of the wounded men and of the mentally broken and those who never were able to readjust themselves are still suffering and still paying. Chapter 4, How to Smash This Racket. Well, it's a racket, all right. A few profit and the many pay. But there is a way to stop it. You can't end it by disarmament conferences. You can't eliminate it by peace parleys at Geneva. Well-meaning but impractical groups can't wipe it out by resolutions. It can be smashed effectively only by taking the profit out of war. The only way to smash this racket is to conscript capital and industry and labor before the nation's manhood can be conscripted. 1 month before the government can conscript the young men of the nation, it must conscript capital and industry and labor. Let the officers and the directors and the high-powered executives of our armament factories and our munitions makers and our shipbuilders and our airplane builders and the manufacturers of all other things that provide profit in wartime, as well as the bankers and the speculators, be conscripted to get $30 a month, the same wage as the lads in the trenches get. Let the workers in these plants get the same wages. All the workers. All presidents, all executives, all directors, all managers, all bankers. Yes, and all generals and all admirals, and all officers, and all politicians, and all government office holders. Everyone in the nation be restricted to a total monthly income not to exceed that paid to the soldier in the trenches. Let all...
Okay. We'll be able to finish this. It's got 10 minutes left and about 10 minutes in the next segment. And then if we got to go a little long, we will.
The overall picture in the real estate market today is one of frustration when you take many factors into consideration. The housing market pundits would have you believe that everything is okay, but the long-term trending on the real estate numbers say otherwise. You are starting to see another wave of commercial and retail center vacancies, which follows a downturn in the residential market. So when you are ready to sell your house, I can help. This is Donna Hancock with Silver Alliance Realty in Phoenix, Arizona, and I can take some of the guesswork out of the home selling process, providing you with market trends in your area and detailing what you can expect before, during, and after the transaction. Being in the real estate business for almost 20 years now has afforded me knowledge of the market, networking with industry specialists along the way, and that includes professionals that can help after the sale to help protect your assets. So let's get moving today. Please feel free to call or message me at 602-828-1819. That's 602-828-1819, or visit my webpage at donnahancock.com.
There are those that just want to be left alone. And those that just won't leave them alone. Which one are you? The Ernest Hancock Show.
These kings and tycoons and masters of business and all those workers in industry and all our senators and governors and majors pay half of their monthly $30 wage to their families and pay war risk insurance and buy Liberty Bonds. Why shouldn't they? They aren't running any risk of being killed, or of having their bodies mangled, or their minds shattered. They aren't sleeping in muddy trenches. They aren't hungry. The soldiers are. Give capital and industry and labor 30 days to think it over, and you will find, by that time, there will be no war. That will smash the war racket. That and nothing else. Maybe I'm a little too optimistic. Capital still has some say. So capital won't permit the taking of the profit out of war until the people, those who do the suffering and still pay the price, make up their minds that those they elect to office shall do their bidding and not that of the profiteers. Another step necessary in this fight to smash the war racket is the limited plebiscite to determine whether a war should be declared. A plebiscite not of all the voters, but merely of those who would be called upon to do the fighting and the dying. There wouldn't be very much sense in having a 76-year-old president of a munitions factory, or the flat-footed head of an international banking firm, or the cross-eyed manager of a uniform manufacturing, all of whom see visions of tremendous profits in the event of war, voting on whether the nation should go to war or not. They never would be called upon to shoulder arms, to sleep in a trench, and to be shot. Only those who would be called upon to risk their lives for their country should have the privilege of voting to determine whether the nation should go to war. There is ample precedent for restricting the voting to those affected. Many of our states have restrictions on those permitted to vote. In most, it is necessary to be able to read and write before you may vote. In some, you must own property. It would be a simple matter each year for the men coming of military age to register in their communities as they did in the draft during the World War and be examined physically. Those who could pass, and who would therefore be called upon to bear arms in the event of war, would be eligible to vote in a limited plebiscite. They should be the ones to have the power to decide, and not a Congress, few of whose members are within the age limit and fewer still of whom are in physical condition to bear arms. Only those who must suffer should have the right to vote. A third step in this business of smashing the war racket is to make certain that our military forces are truly forces for defense only. At each session of Congress, the question of further naval appropriations comes up. The swivel-chaired admirals of Washington, and there are always a lot of them, are very adroit lobbyists, and they are smart. They don't shout that, "We need a lot of battleships to war on this nation or that nation." Oh no. First of all, they let it be known that America is menaced by a great naval power. Almost any day, these admirals will tell you, the great fleet of this supposed enemy will strike suddenly and annihilate 125 million people. Just like that. Then they begin to cry for a larger navy. For what? To fight the enemy? Oh my, no. Oh no. For defense purposes only. Then, incidentally, they announce maneuvers in the Pacific for defense. The Pacific is a great big ocean. We have a tremendous coastline on the Pacific. Will the maneuvers be off the coast, 200 or 300 miles? Oh no, the maneuvers will be 2,000, yes, perhaps even 3,500 miles off the coast. The Japanese, a proud people, of course will be pleased beyond expression to see the United States fleet so close to Nippon's shores. Even as pleased as we'd be the residents of California were they to dimly discern through the morning mist the Japanese fleet playing at war games off Los Angeles. The ships of our Navy, it can be seen, should be specifically limited by law to within 200 miles of our coastlines. Had that been the law in 1898, the Maine would have never gone to Havana Harbor. She would never have blown up. There would have been no war with Spain with its attendant loss of life. 200 miles is ample, in the opinion of experts, for defense purposes. Our nation cannot start an offensive war if its ships can't go further than 200 miles from the coastline. Planes might be permitted to go as far as 500 miles from the coastline for purposes of reconnaissance. And the Army should never leave the territorial limits of our nation. To summarize, three steps must be taken to smash the war racket. We must take the profit out of war. We must permit the youth of our land, who would bear arms, to decide whether or not there should be war. We must limit our military forces to home defense purposes. Chapter 5. To Hell with War. I am not a fool as to believe that war is a thing of the past. I know that people do not want war, but there is no use in saying they cannot be pushed into another war. Looking back, Woodrow Wilson was reelected president in 1916 on a platform that he had kept us out of war, and on the implied promise that he would keep us out of war. Yet 5 months later, he asked Congress to declare war on Germany. In that five-month interval, the people had not been asked whether they had changed their minds. The 4 million young men who put on uniforms and marched or sailed away were not asked whether they wanted to go forth to suffer and die. Then what caused our government to change its mind so suddenly? Money. An Allied commission, it may be recalled, came over shortly before the war declaration and called on the president. The president summoned a group of advisors. The head of the commission spoke. Stripped of its diplomatic language, this is what he told the president and his group. There's no use kidding ourselves any longer. The cause of the Allies is lost. We now owe you American bankers, American munitions makers, American manufacturers, American speculators, American exporters, $5 or $6 billion. If we lose, and without the help of the United States we must lose, we, England, France, and Italy, cannot pay back this money, and Germany won't. So, had secrecy been outlawed as far as war negotiations were concerned, and had the press been invited to be present at that conference, or had radio been available to broadcast the proceedings, America never would have entered the World War. But this conference, like all war discussions, was shrouded in utmost secrecy. When our boys were sent off to war, they were told it was a war to make the world safe for democracy, and a war to end all wars. Well, 18 years after, the world has less of democracy than it had before. Besides, what business is it of ours, whether Russia or Germany or England or France or Italy or Austria live under democracies or monarchies, whether they are fascists or communists? Our problem is to preserve our own democracy. And very little, if anything, has been accomplished to assure us that the World War was really the war to end all wars. Yes, we have had disarmament conferences and limitations of arms conferences. They don't mean a thing. One has just failed. The results of another have been nullified. We send our professional soldiers and sailors and our politicians and our diplomats to these conferences. And what happens? The professional soldiers and sailors don't want to disarm. No admiral wants to be without a ship. No general wants to be without a command. Both mean men without jobs. They're not for disarmament. They cannot be for limitations of arms. And at all these conferences, lurking in the background but all powerful just the same, are the sinister agents of those who profit by war. They see to it that these conferences do not disarm or seriously limit armaments. The chief aim of any power at any of these conferences has not been to achieve disarmament to prevent war, but rather to get more armament for itself and less for any potential foe. There's only one way to disarm with any semblance of practicality. That is for all nations to get together and scrap every ship, every gun, every rifle, every tank, every warplane. Even this, if it were possible, would not be enough. The next war, according to experts, will be fought not with battleships, not with artillery, not with rifles, and not with machine guns. It will be fought with deadly chemicals and gases. Secretly, each nation is studying and perfecting newer and ghastlier means of annihilating its foes wholesale. Yes, ships will continue to be built, for the shipbuilders must make their profits, and guns still be manufactured, and powders and rifles will be made, for the munitions makers must make their huge profits. And the soldiers, of course, must wear uniforms, for the manufacturer must make their war profits too. But victory or defeat will be determined by the skill and ingenuity of our scientists. If we put them to work making poison gas and more fiendish mechanical and explosive instruments of destruction, they will have no time for the constructive job of building greater prosperity for all peoples. By putting them to this useful job, we can all make more money out of peace than we can out of war, even the munitions makers. So, I say, to hell with war. Smedley Darlington Butler, Major General, United States Marine Corps, retired.
Boom! Squeezed it in. I'm glad we did that. All right. Next hour, we have Dr. Sherry Tenpenny.
This is Michael Dean from the Freedom Fiends. I've run websites since 1996 and have used over a dozen web hosts in that time. AgristHosting.com is the only one that hasn't broken my heart. Agrist Hosting's uptime and service is stellar, and their DDoS mitigation is the best I've seen. That's important because if you tell the truth in this world, you'll ruffle feathers. And some people will try dirty tricks to silence your voice. No matter what the haters hit us with, Agorist Hosting keeps our websites online. If you have a mission-critical commercial presence or a world-changing activism site, you cannot tolerate any skullduggery. So go with agristhosting.com. Have a WordPress or blog site, but you're not satisfied with performance or uptime? Or just want raw hosting? Want to pay with Bitcoin? Agorist Hosting specializes in high-performance hosting with personalized service. Go to agristhosting.com and click on the button that says Get Hosted. That's agristhosting.com.
Declare Your Independence with Ernest Hancock continues after the news, live on the Liberty Radio Network at LRN.fm.
This is the Liberty Beat, your daily source for Liberty news and activist updates. Produced in partnership with the SNLS Network and listeners like you. Online at snlsnetwork.com. I'm Mick Murrow with your latest edition of the Liberty Beat. Gold is trading at $1,552, silver at $17.90, and Bitcoin is trading around $7,825. Today's gold, silver, and Bitcoin prices are brought to you by Brave Botanicals, high-quality kratom and CBD at reasonable prices with excellent customer service. Brave Botanicals is activist-owned and mission-driven. The Liberty Beat and Brave Botanicals believe so strongly in the power of kratom, we're giving it away for free. Just go to libertybeat.news/freekratom. This is the Liberty Beat at snlsnetwork.com. In the news, Iran's civil aviation chief is rejecting U.S. claims that Ukraine International Airlines Flight 752 was shot down by Iranian missiles as illogical rumors. On Thursday, Newsweek was among the first U.S. media outlets to cite an anonymous Pentagon official, an anonymous senior U.S. intelligence official, and an Iraqi intelligence official in a report claiming that the Ukrainian jet that crashed shortly after taking off from Tehran was struck by an anti-aircraft missile system. Newsweek's report comes on the heels of a Reuters report, which indicated that the crash of the plane had suffered a technical malfunction and was not shut down. According to Times of Israel, the report quoted five unnamed security sources, three Americans, one European, and one Canadian, as saying the initial assessment is that Iran's explanation is accurate. However, an unnamed U.S. official later told Reuters the U.S. satellites detected the launch of two missiles before the plane crashed. Ever wonder where we find all the news to report right here on the Liberty Beat? Visit snls.news to get the world's most censored media published all in one place. Save yourself from the endless time spent searching for reliable alternative media. SNLS News makes it quick and easy. No ads, no clickbait, just raw headlines, 24 hours a day. Visit snls.news and get informed today without the corporate media spin. Your news now continues. It's no secret that Bill Clinton was friends with convicted pedophile Jeffrey Epstein. But not only were the pair friends, Epstein donated significantly to the Clinton Foundation and reportedly played a role in creating the Clinton Global Initiative. The Mind Unleashed reports that it's been widely known that the former president was a frequent passenger on Epstein's private jet, the Lolita Express. Clinton flew on the jet at least 26 times, sometimes with Secret Service and sometimes without. One of the most notable trips took Clinton to Africa in 2002, along with fellow passengers Kevin Spacey, Ghislaine Maxwell, and Ron Burkle. But now, thanks to photos obtained by The Sun, Clinton's adventures on the Lolita Express are more than just flight logs. According to a new National Bureau of Economic Research paper, approximately 100% of the costs associated with the tariffs on Chinese goods have fallen onto American importers and consumers. Activist Post reports it's a simple economic fact that those at the bottom of the production hierarchy or the consumers, will pay cost increases for any reason. Tariffs are no exception. Research is consistently showing that the finite laws of basic economics don't get broken. In fact, the more government meddling in the issue, the worse it's getting. Free trade should be a human right, but governments of the world have taken it upon themselves to squash the freedom to trade with others for power and political gain. President Donald Trump has repeatedly and falsely claimed that China and other nations have paid the tariffs he levied on thousands of products over the past 2 years. But approximately 100% of those costs have fallen onto American buyers, according to the new National Bureau of Economic Research paper. Support for the Liberty Beat is brought to you by the Homestead Guru. The Homestead Guru is an educational website offering tips, tools, news, stories, and commentary on everything homesteading. Topics include green homes, gardening, animal husbandry, do-it-yourself, home remedies, alternative energy, survivalism, unschooling, and more. Those details are found online at thehomestead.guru. This is the Liberty Beat, powered by the SNLS Network at snlsnetwork.com. I'm Mick Murrow, reporting for the Liberty Beat, reminding you, spread liberty with a smile.